Hi, this is Bill Ringel, host of My Quest for the Best, where we meet business thought and community leaders to discuss issues relevant to entrepreneurial growth. Joining me today is Felicia Satterly. Felicia is on a mission to help business experts and celebrities create meaningful connections through effective communication and public speaking. The two-time Amazon number one best-selling author of Kill the Elevator Speech and 21 Ways to Make Money Speaking has shared her ideas across the United States and abroad. Felicia presents to audiences on communication, speaking, and being a successful entrepreneur in spite of every twist and turn that life can surprise you with. As a cancer survivor, Felicia's enthusiastic passion for communication is contagious because she knows one important message delivered with power can transform a life. Welcome, Felicia.
Hi, Bill. Thanks for having me.
It's great having you here. Tell me, who was a role model for success in business for you when you were growing up?
You know, I actually was not interested in business when I was growing up, particularly entrepreneurial business, because my dad had a bocce shop that he had with a business partner, and I never saw him. he was never home, and I never really got to, until I was like seven when he got a quote job at a company doing similar kinds of work, but working for a big organization, big corporation. And so I was not turned on to business until I was in my high school years, and I was actually in junior achievement. And as I started to look around, I had all the foods and cooking classes you could take. And it was right about the time where Martha Stewart was becoming a real big deal in the world. That was in the 80s. And I just watched her, and Oprah was another that I would watch. And I lived in the Chicago area, in the Chicago market. So Oprah started her show AM Chicago in 1986. And I think I saw that first episode that she was on. And I watched Oprah, I watched Martha Stewart's businesses just explode over the years. So I would say those are my earliest role models, with that touch in the back of my mind of, yeah, but if you have a business, you never get to see your family. So I eventually learned that, nope, not if you design it right. Because as a mom, I actually started my business so that I could be home more with my girls, who were 1 and 3 years old when I started 10 years ago.
That's an important lesson right in and of itself, that you can design it any way that you want. What led you to start your own business then? What were the circumstances around it?
Well, I worked in a couple of different roles in various corporations and organizations, typically involved sales or speaking in front of groups or both, doing training, speaking, sales training, that kind of thing. And then I transitioned to being a college professor, and I was teaching, in some cases, sometimes I would teach part-time and still be working my full-time job, and that was when I was single and didn't have any kids. But when I did get married and I did have my kids, I loved teaching. I was teaching communication courses. I was teaching public speaking courses. But it took me away from my own children a bit too much. And I had a real rough birth with my second daughter. We both almost died. We didn't. We're doing great. She's in sixth grade now and doing fantastic. But it was a real scary time for me and for our family. And I just decided, you know, life is real short. And I'm going to be home with my kids, but, you know, mommy with two master's degrees can't just quite sit home and do nothing. So I wanted to do something more. I wanted to be able to both contribute to my family's bottom line because, we needed it. My husband's career wasn't enough to support our family and our lifestyle the way we wanted to. So I needed to make money, but I wanted to be home with my kids, and so that's how I decided, well, I'm going to start working from home, and I needed to figure out how to use the internet to do it. And that's exactly what I did, and built a thriving coaching business, teaching teleseminars at the time, then webinars, began and being invited to speak professionally, to be, you know, paid to speak. I've been a speaker my whole life since I was 7 years old in front of large groups of people. So I'm no stranger to the stage. So, started to be invited to speak, and people wanted to know, well, where's your book? And so I started to write books And my business has just grown exponentially over the years, and I'm just so blessed to be able to do the kind of work that I love to do, that I feel that I'm here to do, and still be able to be home and be mom to my girls, who are now a middle schooler and a high schooler.
So, Alicia, what was it like when you were contemplating starting this online business and helping others connect with the power of speaking effectively? How did you get your first client? Do you remember that, or was it a first program or first class? A lot of people sit with that same issue, and it would be terrific to hear how you overcame it on the way to building a thriving business.
Well, you know what's funny is when I very first started in 2006, I looked at my skills and abilities. I looked around at the world around me, and I said, looks like people need communication skills, right? And so I went down the path. I actually thought I was a life coach. And so I got life coach training and certifications, and I was going to help people with their personal relationships. I wanted to be a relationship coach. And I was using social media, which didn't look anything at that time like it does today. There was no LinkedIn to speak of. There was no Facebook for business folks. I think Facebook was just a baby still on college campuses at the time. So it was Yahoo Group. And it was another group called Rise. And so I was interacting there. And I found that people kept asking questions, as they do on social media and in various groups. And you know, I was involved in different entrepreneur groups because I thought, well, those are kind of good group of people that I could do life coaching with. And they kept asking questions like, hey, I have to go give a speech next week. I don't know what to say. And how do I start my speech? And, like, I would see questions like that all the time. I'd be like, how do you not know? Didn't you have this in high school? Didn't you take that class in college? Come on. And so I would, you know, answer these questions, and I would write these answers for them. And they were often long answers. And I had a coach of mine actually say to me, Felicia, why aren't you teaching speaking? Why aren't you doing that for your business? So I was like, everybody has speaking. What are you talking about? Well, she said, you might want to think twice about that. So that was one of my first big lessons. Actually, there were two. Number one, you can start somewhere, but you don't have to be married to what you start with. You can change, which I did. So I changed from being a life coach to being communication and speaking coach. And the second is that don't take for granted what you know, because people will pay you for that knowledge and to get better at the thing that you just know and live and breathe and do easily. So that's what I started to do. And so my first clients came from interacting socially on social media, and they could see easily from my answers to questions and the way that I interacted there that I clearly knew what I was doing. And I kept having people say, well, how are you doing that? How are you doing that? And so I would coach people privately on that. If they had a speech to do that was coming up, I would, I would get on the phone with them, and I'd coach them for a half hour, an hour, whatever the case was. And then I eventually put together my first online, digital, virtual kind of a training program. And I've continued from there.
Great. So if you think about the types of people who come to your programs and invite you to speak to their groups today, what are the types of questions they're struggling with that you can be a solution for and help them understand and move from point A to point B?
Well, you know, I work with a lot of associations that have small business owners who are members of the association. And because I really can help them. I understand that marketing
Alicia,
is essentially – okay.
I'm going to jump in. Do you have a name or two of associations so that we could get a sense of that?
Yeah, so
– say such as?
Yeah, I would say associations such as I've worked with massage therapists, organizers, service types of businesses. And so these are the kinds of folks that they need to get their messages out. Often they're very small. They might be themselves 1, 2, 3, 4 people working with them, for them. And they're responsible for bringing in their own customers, their own clients. I've spoken with coaching groups and organizations, that kind of thing. And so, these are the kinds of folks that I have spoken to, and it really helps them to see that you don't have to necessarily talk to just one person at a time. You can talk to groups of people at a time, particularly if you are a small business. A one person at a time sale is real difficult, or when you're doing just one thing at a time, as opposed to, let me think about how I can leverage what I'm doing by being a speaker at a meeting instead of going and being just one person walking around and shaking hands, or how I can use social media to connect and have my messages out there and living 24/7, or how I can use video and, again, have my messages out there living and working for me 24/7. And so those are the kinds of people that I've helped, and it's actually made a big difference for a lot of folks. I've even worked with people who were inside companies.
So one of the things that you're helping people understand is how to take their message and leverage it through social media so that it reaches a wider audience and also works while they're doing something else, whether it's serving clients or even relaxing. That's a really
yes, exactly. Mm-hmm.
One of the things that if you're encouraging people to speak before groups that everyone needs to know is how to use their elevator speech. What is an elevator speech, and why is it so hard for people to grasp how to use it correctly?
Okay, so an elevator speech is that we're told that 30 seconds to some people I've heard up to 2 minutes, that is the answer to the question, what do you do? And so well-meaning experts for years have told us, well, we need to have an answer to that question, and it should be memorized, and it should meet certain parameters and so on and so forth, designed to get the other person to go, oh, how do you do that? Or, oh, that sounds exactly what I need. I would like to hire you. Or, oh, I can refer you to somebody else right there after that 30 seconds to 60 seconds or however long it is. So that's what an elevator speech is.
What happens in the real world is
a lot of people don't have these elevator speeches together. And so they panic when they go to meetings. And when somebody asks what they do, I know a lot of people immediately begin beating themselves up. Like, I know I should have practiced this. I know I should have an answer to this. I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do. Oh, my gosh. What am I going to do? And then they kind of fumble through, and they say whatever they say, and they feel bad about it. And it feels awkward, and it feels weird, and it's just not cool. Or the people that do have an elevator speech ready, they deliver their memorized thing, and they're all proud of themselves. But typically what happens on the other end is the other person, what's happening in their brain is they're going, how do I even know how to process this? Because what's happening is people are, when you put together a practice, memorized piece of communication that is essentially a script isn't, the purpose of a script is not, for one person to have a conversation with another person. The purpose of a script and a memorized piece of communication or a speech is from one to many, not one to one in an individual situation. So it leaves the person who is hearing this script, this speech, I always feel like I need a shower. Like, what? I was verbally vomited on. Are you kidding me? Like, I just wanted to know, who are you? And so
you're saying that it's pretty easy for most people to tell when someone is either A, unprepared, or B, overprepared.
Yes, and it's uncomfortable either way.
So what is someone to do in order to strike that middle ground where you're actually striving to do what with an elevator speech?
Okay. So when people are at meetings where they're going to have the question, what do you do? The reason that people are asking that question is because, number one, they don't know what else to say. They don't know what else to ask. And it's a very common question that you might get if you run into a friend on the street or in the supermarket or wherever, and you haven't seen them for a while, and you go, hey, how are you? Right? The how are you question is just a way to open the conversation. They don't want to hear, from your Aunt Mabel, oh, my bursitis is killing me and my left leg with the ring, you can't even believe. Like, they don't want that answer, right? And so just like people don't want that answer in the personal world when they ask, how do you do? in the professional world, when they ask, what do you do, that's just somebody reaching out to you and saying, I would like to have a conversation with you. I'm not sure what else to say, so I'm just going to start here. So when someone asks you that question, you need to keep in mind a couple of things. That, number one, being this is someone who wants to have a conversation with you. That's a good thing. That means they're interested in you. Number two, they're not going to remember blah, 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 blah. They're going to remember 2 to 4 words about you. That's it. Research has shown 2 to 4 words are all that a person is going to remember about another person. If you were to say, hey, what do you know about Bill? Oh, Bill's a podcast host. Hey, podcast host, right? There's the 2 words that I could take back from a relationship, a conversation. And if I was going to add a couple more, podcast hosts for entrepreneurs. Great, right? For business. So now that's what I might remember about you. After our brief conversation, we had a whole lunch together, right? So remember that people are going to only remember those 2 to 4 words about you. So now you get to decide, would you like to be in charge of those 2 to 4 words and give them to that person? Or would you like to say blah, 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 and help them or and have them try to figure it out and not remember the 2 to 4 words that you think are most important about you and what you do? So, back up the train.
So certainly people want to be in charge of what those words are so that they can make it both advantageous as well as a constructive conversation.
Yes, exactly. And here's something else. They don't always have to be the same 2 to 4 words. Because in business, if someone runs their own business, it's likely they do a whole bunch of things. And you say, well, gosh, to boil down everything I do in 2 to 4 words, please, I don't think I could do that. Well, I'm not asking you to. What I'm asking you to do is think about, well, what's the situation that you're in? What's the meeting that you're in? What's the event that you're at? And does it make sense for you to say, oh, I'm a podcast host for business people? Ooh, cool. If you're in a place where there's lots of speakers and lots of authors, that might make sense for someone who has a podcast. Maybe they're also a consultant. Maybe they're also an author themselves. Maybe they're also, name a bunch of other different things that somebody else could be doing in their business if they have a podcast. But if they're in a place where they're going to be able to get some great guests for their show, that might be the thing that they lead with, is I'm a podcast host for businesses. Oh, cool. I have a business book. Maybe we are a good connection. Wow, all of a sudden now you have something to talk about, right?
Let me jump in here. I want to ask you about a client who you've helped with their elevator speech that's more broadly applicable, because there are very, very few people listening to this, and this is all going to be edited out, few people listening to this who host their own podcasts. So I'm going to jump in, and I'm going to say, Felicia, tell me about someone with whom you've worked to improve their elevator speech. And then you pick any person who had a crummy one, and then talk about how you transformed it. All right?
Okay. Well, I don't work with...
So wait, let me prompt.
Okay.
Felicia, tell me about someone who you've helped transform the awkwardness or unpreparedness that they had with their elevator speech so that they could connect with the person who was asking them, so what do you do?
So this is something that I do all the time with live audiences because I can do it very easily. And I've done it for groups of hundreds of people all the time. So what we do is we say, all right, you don't need a lot of words. You need the 2 to 4 words. So what are your 2 to 4 words? You say them. And then instead of asking somebody, what do? You ask this question instead. You ask, how did you get started? 5 words. How did you get started? So how did you get started doing whatever their business is? Right? And
Let me jump in. Can you think of an example that you could take us through with working with one of the students that you've had come to you, or one of the people who's come to you for coaching?
Sure. So I have worked with, for example, a graphic designer. And they had lots and lots and lots of words to describe what it was that they were doing. And I said, listen, here's the thing. People just need to know in their brain of existing jobs that they have heard of before where they can put you so that they can remember, oh, okay, I know what this person does. And so we very simply took someone from saying, well, I help people build their brand messages that create and grab interest and have logos and business cards that explode and shine. Like, what do you do? And very simply, to boil all those words away, down to, I'm a graphic designer, and I work with people who have businesses. Oh, great. That's wonderful. Now, all of a sudden, they're having a very easy conversation. Those are the 2 to 4 words. I am a graphic designer for businesses. Great. And then, beyond that, answering the question themselves as if they had been asked it, how did you get started? So maybe they answer how they got started. You know, I got started with that when I was however old, and I was introduced to the computer, and I was so excited to see you could actually do designing on the computer. I always used to doodle when I was in grade school or in high school, or like whatever their origin story is. Tell your story.
I get that. That's really neat, because now you're connecting at a level where everyone's a beginner at something.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that's why you ask that question of the other person, how did you get started? And you don't even have to know what they do. You can just say, so how did you get started doing the kind of work you do today? That's it. And then they'll tell you the kind of work that they do, and they'll tell you their story. And what happens in that moment is people get, they get happy and they get excited, because when you ask someone about a time when they started doing something that typically they're enjoying, that's why they're doing it. I mean, for the most part, people are doing work that they like, and if they don't, then maybe they should be looking for other work. But when you ask them, how did you get started with something, it brings up very typically happy memories. So what's happening in their body is they're experiencing this flood of positive emotions as they're being brought back to a happy, positive memory in their life. And they're very likely not going to remember the exact conversation that you had, but they're going to associate you with those positive emotions that they had in their body, and they're going to remember you. First of all, they're going to remember you. And second of all, they're going to remember you in a positive way because you made them feel good. That's why you ask someone to tell you their happy story about how they got started.
That's great, and it really gives someone an easy tool that they can use every time they go into a networking meeting or somewhere where they're going to connect with other people. What about taking this step further? How does someone become a person who's more persuasive and able to network with the kind of people that they want based upon how they communicate?
So in terms of being persuasive, I actually
So let me back up. I'm going to back up.
Yeah.
What I was looking for there was when you said in the book that persuasive speakers talk faster than others, and it comes across as being more charismatic. So let me ask that question a different way.
Okay.
Felicia, does it matter how the question is asked in order to elicit the kind of response that you're looking for?
You know, you want to ask it in a conversational kind of a way. And so however you normally would have a conversation, and you ask it in an open way where you're looking for, where you're really interested in the other person. The kind of communication we're talking about is very simply conversational communication with the purpose. And the purpose is you're trying to decide, is this somebody that I want to maybe know going forward? Is this somebody that I can refer to somebody else? Is this somebody that might be a good client for me? Is this somebody who might be able to refer me to somebody else, right? Is this a relationship that I want to continue with and move forward past this room, past this experience today? And maybe it is, and maybe it's not. And whether it is or it's not, you can still have a positive interaction. And maybe it's not something that you see today being someone that you want to continue speaking with or having it, you know, communicating with or connecting with on social media for whatever purpose. But maybe something will change, and in a couple of months later down the line, you may look back at their business card and go, oh, wow, yeah, I really do need somebody like this in my life. Or, wow, this might be somebody who would be good. Now, if it turns out that they're a person who would be someone that would be, let's say, an ideal client for you, you don't immediately go into, hey, I'd love to help work for you. I'd love to do some work. I know I can help you. When you say
so what is it
like
that someone, when you make a connection like that at a meeting, what are some things that someone needs to remember in order to make it a stronger connection that they could follow up with later on?
Ask a lot of questions. Ask questions about them. Ask questions about where they are, about what they experience, about what some of their biggest challenges are, about some of their biggest successes. Find out about them. When you get people talking about themselves, what happens is they like you more and they like you better. So you don't have to say a whole lot. You can ask questions and let the other person talk. And as they're talking, what's happening? Well, they're giving you information, right? They're giving you useful information about who they are, what they're about, and maybe at first blush you think, yeah, this might be an ideal, perfect person. But then as you start to ask questions and they start talking, you realize, oh, yeah, no, they're not really a good potential client for me for whatever reason. Or maybe they verify that, wow, yeah, my first impression was right. This person might be a great potential client for me. You take their card, and then you can ask them, listen, I'd love to connect with you and learn a little bit more about you. It sounds like maybe, based on our brief conversation here, this might be something that I can help you with. If you'd be interested in that, and I always offer something for free. I offer a way to be in touch with somebody moving forward. And then I have automated systems in place once they get something for free. But I don't automatically take their business card and sign them up for something. I'll say, here's a card, here's something for free on the back. If you'd like, I'd be happy to send it to you. If they say yes, great. I make a note on the back of their card and I send it to them. And then I start the process once I get home of connecting with that person moving forward.
So in working with the kind of experts and executives and entrepreneurs who want to use speaking to be more effective and to use an elevator speech, the whole idea is to use this as a tool that allows you to get in front of groups, share your expertise, share some wisdom that they will benefit from, and then have follow-up conversations in order to leverage the time that you've invested in the meeting. Is that essentially the idea that someone should take away from this in how to kill their elevator speech so they really connect on a human level and use it strategically as a tool for building their business?
The strategic side of it is truly be the speaker at the front of the room. Don't walk, because if you're in a room of 25 people, that would be a small networking meeting. If you're in a group of 50 or 100, you can't possibly, even in the smallest group of 25, can't get around and have a meaningful conversation in the period of that networking meeting with all 25 people. But what if you were the speaker in front of the room of 25 or 50 or 100 people? Well, at the end of that meeting, all of those people know who you are. That's the strategic and leverage advantage. Is be the speaker at the front of the room, because then everybody knows who you are and what you're about. And I call that the signature speech. So the signature speech is truly what kills the elevator speech. You don't need an elevator speech if you're the one that people are there to see and they get to hear you. They get to hear your 20-minute, your 30-minute, your 60-minute, however long you get, your presentation about what you do, who you are, and also helping them, providing value to the audience. That's what kills the elevators.
That's very clear. And the benefits of doing so are immensely so. It's very, very complete in order to have this small but powerful nugget. What else, as you were writing the book, what were some of the things that surprised you that you thought one thing about killing an elevator speech, and in the research, it either expanded it beyond what you were thinking, or it actually challenged an idea that you had?
Well, of course, writing a book about doing elevator speeches, I went to lots of networking meetings, and I tried a bunch of different things. But what I found the most interesting was that when I would actually share with people that I was writing a book called Kill the Elevator Speech, they were fascinated. Like, wow, what do I do instead? Well, where do we go? Tell me more about that. Like, people just wanted to know more about that. So, I mean, you know, even just saying, well, I'm actually writing a book called Kill the Elevator Speech. Wow. Right? And so that would lead to some conversations. And I had people time and again, once they heard that and they said, well, what do I do instead? And I said, for the rest of the meeting, don't ask people what they do. Ask how they got started. Ask them, how did you get started? Go ask them and then let me know how it goes. And every time and again, whether they would come up to me at the end of the meeting or I would get social media connections on LinkedIn or Facebook later, like, oh, my gosh, that thing you said totally worked. I had such great conversations from then on, and it was so easy, and I felt so comfortable. So it was really a powerful validation that I could see happening in real time with people who were interested in finding a way to connect with somebody else and connect with them authentically for, you know, a true connection. And sometimes they smile at me and wink at me and wave from across the room, like, you know, thumbs up, like, that's awesome. And they're just super excited to have a tool to be able to have a real conversation with somebody else and have them go real well. I mean, I've had people come back and say, wow, I got a client out of that conversation. Or, you know, I found somebody that can help me with something that I don't think I ever would have found that person. So they're just absolutely thrilled.
And in doing your research, it brought you to a lot of stages to share your ideas. In the book, you talk about meeting Zig Ziglar. Can you tell us what that was like?
Oh, yeah. So I met Zig when we were speaking at an event in 2009 or 2010. And it was after he had some health challenges. And he wasn't the same Zig that people had known for decades before. But it was a cool moment because when he came into the room, I was one of the only people. I was, as a speaker, I always sit in the very last row and I watch the other speakers. And sometimes if you know, the meeting planner or whoever needs to get a hold of me, I'm very easy to find. I'm in the back row. So as I turned around and I saw Zig Ziglar walked in the room. And, of course, he had been a hero of mine at being a professional speaker. And so I got up and I introduced myself. And we sat down, and he looked at me, and we had just a beautiful conversation to the point where other people noticed that Zig Ziglar had come in the room, and they were lined up behind me. He paid no attention to the people behind me. He maintained eye contact with me the entire time and acted as if there was no one else in the room but me. It was amazing. And I'm told he has always done that. He had always have done that during his whole life, his whole career. Is people felt like they were the only person in the room and that they were the most important person to him at that time. That's the power of connecting with someone on a true, real, authentic level.
After you speak with someone and have an initial connection with them and you've had the conversation about, so what did you do? How did you get started? What are some tips that people could use for other things to talk about to further that conversation and build it out a little bit further?
Okay, so a handful of other questions. You can lead with these questions, or you can just have them and sprinkle them throughout the conversation. So you can ask people to tell you about the favorite thing that they do. Like, so what's your favorite part of your
skit? Yes? Give us the FORM acronym and explain what that means. So here's a quick tip for FORM. Family, occupation, recreation.
Family, occupation. So, tell me again. Family, occupation.
Recreation. And then message, and motivation, memories.
Motivation. Okay. Yep.
So, Felicia, do you have something that people can use to help remember some topics to ask others about after they get past the initial part of the conversation?
Yes. So super easy. We have a whole number of things in common in our lives. And so think about the things that people have in common. There's an acronym called FORM, F-O-R-M, right? So everybody has a family, whether they have a family of their own that they're married and they have kids, or they come from a family, right? Maybe they're a young single person, like, oh, where's your family from? Like, you can talk about that. occupation, talk about their work. And so ask them questions about, you know, beyond how they got started, what are they like? What's their favorite boss that they've ever had? Ask them questions about their work, their work life. Recreation. So what are some of the things you love to do when you're not working? Okay, so, ask them those kinds of questions. What kind of hobbies they have, what kinds of things that they enjoy doing. And then finally, the M, and this form acronym, that's not mine. I didn't come up with it. There are other folks have talked about it. But so the M could be a bunch of different things. It could be message. It could be motivation. It could be whatever. So, if you're thinking M being motivation, you might say, what are you excited about when you get up in the morning? What are you most passionate about in your life? Or what motivates you to move forward, with when you're having a bad day? Tell me what makes you move forward, whatever. So, ask them about their motivations for things, or ask them, about their message. If you had one message to deliver to the world, what would it be? And that's kind of a big question. Not a lot of people are going to necessarily have an answer to that. Not everybody's a motivational speaker. and if you never get to the M, that's okay, because you got plenty to talk about between family, occupation, and recreation. But those are some of the ways that you could think about where a conversation can very easily go. And, again, what are these four things, the FORM, the family, occupation, recreation, and motivation or message, what do they do? Well, you're asking them for typically happy things in their lives, for positive things. So, again, they may not remember the conversation that you had. They won't remember the whole thing that they talked about, and they told you about their kids, or they told you about their favorite vacation spot or whatever. But they'll remember that they felt good when they were talking to you, and that's important.
You're doing a lot of things yourself. You're coaching others. You're teaching classes online and in person, giving speeches. What are two or three tips that you have for staying productive and on track?
I hire people to do the stuff that I'm not good at and that I don't like to do, or anything that I'm dragging my feet on. So, for example, I automate it. So a great example would be I use a software called Calendly. It's like calendar, but it's Calendly with an L-Y at the end instead of an E-R. And so when somebody says, hey, Felicia, I want to talk to you about whatever, I send them to a Calendly link. So I'm not doing that ridiculous back and forth. Well, can't you, here's four times that I could get together, and I'm on the East Coast time. What time zone are you in? Oh, you're in that time? Okay, wait, now what time is it there? It's like, that's ridiculous. So I send them to my Calendly link. Somebody says, hey, I want to get together and have a conversation. What times work best for you? All I do is I send them this link, and I've got a link for if there's a 20-minute, I have a 20-minute link, I have a 30-minute link, I have a 60-minute link. The clients are the ones who usually end up with the 60-minute link, obviously. And then they can set their own time. And what it does is it automatically hooks in with my, I use Google Calendar. It automatically hooks in with my Google Calendar so that if I block out time, for example, this week my parents are here visiting, so I've blocked out all full afternoons so that I can spend time with them and not be working the whole time that they're visiting. So I just block out those times. So those times then are blocked out on my Calendly, so nobody could just accidentally take a time that, that I wouldn't want to be working. So I just block out times on my calendar. Calendly sees that, and they go, well, here's the seven times, on Tuesday that Felicia is available for a 30-minute meeting or consultation or whatever the case may be. So I automate as much as possible, and I outsource as much as possible so that I'm doing only the kind of work that I am very best suited to do that serves the world in the greatest way possible.
Felicia, you've been so generous with your time today in sharing important questions to ask in order to help people connect with others in a real way. Instead of asking, what do you do, asking instead, how do you get started? You've talked about how the strategic move up is to not just go and meet people one-on-one at a meeting, but actually be the front-of-the-room speaker so that then everyone has a chance to get to know you and a little bit about what you do as an opportunity to connect with you. In meetings where people have gotten through the initial conversation and exchange with each other, you've given us the idea and the tool of using FORM as an acronym to talk about their family, occupation, recreation, and their motivation. And then the importance of blocking time and delegating to stay productive. So thank you so much for sharing on My Quest for the Best today.
Thank you so much for having me. You know, in closing, I think the biggest thing that I want to say to folks around communication and meeting other people is just simply relax. Remember that advice that maybe if your mom was anything like mine, that she gave you in grade school, middle school, or high school to be yourself? Be yourself. And remember that the other person is possibly just as nervous, just as uncomfortable as you are. And so the 2 to 4 words is all you need to know about who you are, what you do. And the question, how did you get started, opens up doors to have a true conversation on a human level with another person. And that's where relationships begin, and that's where success begins.